What's going on, everybody? It's Wednesday night, January 17th. You're tuned in to the MMA Podcast 217. A ton to break down, as always, joined by P Money. What's going on, dude?
Oh, Big Jake, it's a wonderful Wednesday. Just living it up out here in SoCal, my man. Had a nice little UFC St. Louis card, some fun action, and yeah, looking forward to the double title fight for UFC 220 and breaking down the action with you.
As always, you can visit themmapodcast.com, subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube, all for free. Maybe not YouTube. I don't think we've updated that in a while. Maybe we'll get back to doing that. But for now, definitely iTunes and always Twitter. Twitter.com/TheMMAPodcast. Probably your most reliable place, to be honest. Let's start it off like we usually do it. Last weekend, UFC St. Louis. A little recap of all the action there. I actually don't even have that pulled up. Your amazing host stalling on the very first topic. Here we go. UFC Fight Night. Stevens Choi at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis, Missouri. Our friends and regular callers in, Alan and Hunter. The brothers were both over there taking a bunch of pictures up on Twitters and all that. Follow them at Westland Eagle AH and I think Hiro Shinwu. Our friends over there from Baton Rouge. But, yeah, I think they were there to see their guy, Doo-Ho Choi, and their guy, Kyung-Ho Kang. One did well on the prelims, and I guess we'll start there with the card. The prelims, Kyung-Ho Kang, one of the biggest favorites on the card, getting that triangle choke, which seems like a pretty, pretty familiar submission. But we actually haven't seen that of recent. I think there's only been, like, five triangles since 2015 going back. Like, people don't get triangled much these days. Kyung-Ho Kang with the impressive first-round triangle over Guido Cannetti. Jessica Ai getting her first win in a while. I think she had lost four straight, defeating Kalindra Feria at women's flyweight via split decision. You also had James Krause defeating Alex White via unanimous decision. Polo Reyes over Matt Frivola with a very impressive first-round KO, knocked him stiff. And Irene Aldana with the unanimous decision over Talita Bernardo. What did you make of the fight pass in Fox Sports 1 prelims, Pat?
Well, there were some good scraps on the fight pass prelims. Little bit of a slow pace, you know, three decisions to start it off, but I liked the Jessica Ai versus Kalindra Feria fight. Thought it was a solid scrap. Jessica getting that much needed victory. Yeah, it was the first time she had won since 04, maybe 05, something like that. And then the Fox Sports 1 prelims got off to a great start, as you mentioned. Kyung-Ho Kang getting the triangle victory over Guido Cannetti. Very solid scrap, as was Aldana versus Bernardo. Another great women's mixed martial arts match. They were both scrapping. Aldana looked like she was going to have Bernardo finish there. Showed some great strikes. Both these ladies, very tough. Good match there. And, yeah, Polo Reyes versus Frivola. Not the warmest welcome for Frivola into the octagon. Coming in off of the Contender Series, and Polo Reyes, man, yeah, used his striking to beautiful results. Great knockout there. And James Krause over Alex White. Another solid scrap there. So some good action on the prelims.
And then we were brought to the main card. Actually, a really entertaining main card that started off with Darren Elkins as the underdog, defeating Michael Johnson, who had just moved down to featherweight. Really great back-and-forth scrap. Johnson won the first round, but Elkins rallied back. Johnson seemed a little tired. Elkins weathered through a hell of a storm and was able to submit Michael Johnson via rear naked choke. I guess you want to do it fight by fight, or do the whole main card at once. What did you think of Elkins Johnson?
Oh man, that was a typical Darren Elkins performance. The damage, living up to his nickname again, not something I really take particular pleasure in seeing. But man, it's amazing the amount of punishment he's able to weather, and he just gritty grinding. He's got incredible heart and was able to really exploit one of Michael Johnson's weaknesses that we've seen in the octagon, is that he has been prone to, if he loses, he's getting subbed out. It's really the only, he beats so many people. He beat Tony Ferguson, but you know, every now and then he's been known to succumb to the submission. And Darren Elkins, man, he was able to, that chin, he was able to sustain some heavy damage in the first round and end up coming back in the second and got that rear naked. Thought it was a fantastic showing, really.
Then we got to the fight with a couple bangers, Kamaru Usman and Emil Meek. Kamaru Usman really showing off his wrestling in this one, just controlling the fight. Meek landed here and there. Usman did too, but it was primarily Usman getting the best of Meek with his strength and his wrestling, winning the fight 30-27 across the board. Apparently, no one wants to fight this guy. He's scary. Not only does he have knockout power, but as you saw in the fight against, you know, the strong Emil, against Mech, you know, Mech's a strong guy, and Usman seemed to wrestle him around and control him with ease. And that's why he won the fight. That moves Usman to 9. And I think it's about time we give Usman a formidable opponent. Nothing against Mech or Sergio Moraes or Sean Strickland or Worley Alves or Haider Hassan. But it's time to give Usman a real top 10 test. And the guys in front of him all could go. Neil Magny, Darren Till, Jorge Masvidal. There were rumors about Colby Covington turning down a fight. I would love to see that fight too. Usman is a scary, scary guy, especially, you know, to be ranked all the way out there at 9. It seems kind of like a lose-lose proposition for anyone else in the top 8. But I think it's about time we step Usman up an opponent, because he looked... I didn't like what he said afterwards. I don't know if he was trying to be a heel or just saying he was only going 30% for some reason. Dana seemed to be kind of incensed by it. I just didn't understand it more than anything. Usman Mech, what'd you think, B-Money?
Well, I thought this was going to be a blowout for Usman. Mech came in and, you know, I thought put on a pretty strong showing for himself, considering he really seemed to have the stand-up exchanges well in his favor. He was doing really good, seemed to actually hurt Usman at least at one point throughout the match. He showed some solid stand-up skills against Usman. But yeah, Usman with his wrestling and his control, he was really doing a great job of smothering. Wasn't the most action, but he ended up finding his rhythm and picking it up and working the strikes in there as well. Definitely had some big slams in there, bloodied Mech up pretty good. But for myself, I thought it was a pretty good showing for Mech, just hanging in there, going the full 15. And actually, you know, he had his moments, but it was definitely 30-27 for Usman. Great showing for him. I guess when he said he was fighting at 30%, I want to say I'd seen either a tweet or an Instagram post by him that he, I guess, was referring to injuries or something like that, not putting out a 30% effort or something like that, but like his health was 30% or something. Okay. And he didn't want to pull out of the fight, so, you know, he stayed in the fight.
No one likes to pull out.
Right. No, it never feels good. It's always a letdown. And... so, you know, bless him, he stayed in the fight, and he apparently got the W at 30% health. Probably not the tone you want to put out there, but Definitely a fantastic showing for him. And yeah, he needs a fight. If not Covington, Darren Till, I want to say, had openly said that he would fight Kamaru Usman. I feel like it would probably go something similar to what we had just finished, but or to what we had just witnessed with him versus Mech. But then again, Darren Till is even bigger at welterweight. I mean, that is a big welterweight. Who knows what happens when those hands go flying? So you know, there's a couple options, at least one known willing participant for Usman in his next fight with Darren Till.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Usman fight any of those guys, Till included. Moving to the co-main, Jessica Rose Clark versus Paige Van Zandt. Jessica Rose Clark winning the fight largely to Paige breaking her arm in the first round, not really being able to use that arm. She was throwing a lot of kicks, a lot of feints, using her left hand a bit, but wasn't really able to use her arm, and really, arm broken or not, seemed to be getting outclassed by the footwork and just greater overall acumen of the Aussie Jessica Rose Clark, who wins the unanimous decision 30-27, 29-28, 29-28, positioning her, I guess, up with Jessica Eye. You know, we have this burgeoning women's flyweight division with not too many people in it. You have the champ who just won Tough, Nico, whatever. And I mean, that shows you how well known she is right now. Is it in Montano? Nico Montano?
Oh, sorry, mute troubles. Yes, Nico Montano.
Okay.
Wins 125-pound champ.
Yeah, so that is a good weight class, I guess, just by reasoning being that there aren't many people in it, and especially if you weren't a part of that tough season and you're getting wins, you're probably not too far from the belt. So we'll see what happens with Jessica Rose Clark and Paige Van Zandt. What do you think of that fight?
It was a great showing for Jessica Rose Clark. Really unfortunate for Paige that she suffered the broken arm in the first round. I mean, my goodness, you could hear in the replay just the sound when the back fist connected. Yeah, I had no clue what that was when, I mean, I heard it live, but I thought she broke her foot or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, very unfortunate. You know, she had talked about prior to that fight that she was, you know, feeling really good at the weight and, you know, not having to cut down to 115 and, you know, talking about seeing the best Paige we had seen. And, you know, she came out looking decent enough, but I think this was just Jessica Rose Clark's night. She really, you know, she put it all together, and it was still a good competitive affair. But certainly it was all an uphill battle for Paige. I mean, you know, fighting an MMA with a broken arm, I mean, my goodness, that only compromises everything you're trying to do. So Jessica definitely earned a well-earned 30-27 across the board unanimous decision. And yeah, great showing for her, though. Definitely not going to be sleeping on her the next time she fights.
And I guess bring us to the main event, where we disagreed, I believe. I think you took Little Heathen Jeremy Stevens. I took the South Korean Doo-Ho Choi, the Korean Superboy. And it was I who had pie on the face when it was all said and done in the second round. Jeremy Stevens with the TKO landing. Just, I mean, punch after punch. And I mean, Choi has an incredible chin. You really couldn't tell whether he was all sorts of fucked up or whether he was taking all of them in stride. But, man, Stevens lands with such a brute force that you can't take many before you go down. And it was a flurry of strikes that ended it about halfway through the second. Pat, what did you make of the match?
Well, Jake, you know I was ecstatic. I'm not just for actually being right for once, but I'm a huge Lil Heathen mark, and I didn't even know he was a betting underdog in this fight. I could not believe it, but Do Ho Choi, he had a lot of hype, and he still put on a good showing. I mean, it was a solid first round, a lot of good action. Do Ho Choi, probably even, I mean, I want to say he was probably getting the better of it the first round. It was very close, both using a lot of leg kicks. The striking was very on point. It was hard for Lil Heathen to really get the range, it seemed like, in that first round. So things were going well for Choi, for sure, but the Lil Heathen, he only gets more angry, and as you mentioned, Jake, it doesn't take many shots with him. He seems to be one of the heaviest punchers in 145, and he caught Do Ho Choi with I want to say it was the right, that looked to just kind of get behind the ear a little bit. As you mentioned, Do Ho Choi has a good chin, but man, this one, just an equilibrium taker, for lack of a better term. And, he felled Choi, and then just this vicious ground to pound. I mean, the shot, it was another, like, leaping right, kind of a la Dan Hendo versus Michael Bisping type of thing, except for Do Ho Choi wasn't completely unconscious prior to that. But it was just a crazy haymaker of a right, and the referee mercifully stepped in and waved it off at that point. Some serious concussive damage there. But yeah, my man, Little Heathen, overcoming the odds, proving the haters wrong, just getting better with time like a fine wine down there at 145 pounds. So a big shout out to Little Heathen. Was definitely a cherry on top of the sundae for UFC St. Louis for myself.
And it's been an up and down road for Little Heathen ever since he landed that tiger knee on Dennis Bermudez at UFC 189 back July 2015. I believe, is that the same trip where you, I, and the J Jeans on a Twitter rode out to the Grand Canyon, I'm thinking?
That it was.
This is the MMA podcast road trip. Ever since then, landing that tiger knee, he's 3-3, but I submit that two of those losses to Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar at UFC 194 and UFC 205, yes, they are losses, but they are two guys who aren't just currently great UFC featherweights, but are all-time pound for pound. I mean, they are they're both easily probably on the top 20 pound for pound, or top, I mean, shit, maybe top, yeah, both top 20 pound for pound of all time. We're talking about Holloway, a guy who last year fucking beat Aldo back to back, kind of starting to cement a legacy of his own, versus Frankie Edgar, who's done work at multiple weight classes. I don't really fault Jeremy Stevens for either of those losses, both of which were decisions. Neither one could finish him. The other loss, a split decision loss, a close fight to Renato Moicano back, back almost a year ago, back April, at that UFC on Fox card in Kansas City. The other three, all pretty impressive wins. The win against Henan Barao, the win against Gilbert Melendez, and this finish, his first finish since the Tiger Knee against Do Ho Ho Choi. This moves him back up to eighth. And, he's only 31. He's moving back up to eighth. I'm interested in seeing who they match him up against next, because in that little area, around him, that 5 to 10 area in featherweight, there are a lot of interesting matchups you could make. You could pair him up a rematch against Darren Elkins. They fought back in 2014. Stevens won that fight. I would be very interested to see Jeremy Stevens fight Chan Sung Jung. In fact, if they can make that fight, I'm not sure what's currently on Korean Zombie's plate. I know he finished that military history and I think got injured. I'm not sure where he is in rehabbing from that injury. His last fight, a win against Dennis Bermudez last February. I'd love to see Stevens versus Zombie, but not if Zombie's still going to be on the rack for another 3+ months. Well, what do you think, Pat?
Oh man, yes, Stevens versus Zombie. That sounds like a dream fight. That's one I can't really believe hasn't already been made, but I guess it makes sense the timing of Stevens going down to 145 versus Chansung Junk and called up for his military service. So yeah, I definitely say that would be a fantastic matchup. It's I mean the featherweight division, there's certainly, and as you mentioned as well, him versus Darren Elkins. Darren Elkins is on a nice streak himself, 6 wins, and this makes it back to back for Lil Heathen. I mean, Gilbert Melendez, his previous win before the win over Do Ho Choi. So I mean, he's been beating names at 145, and yeah, him versus Elkins or Chansung Jung, those are fantastic matchups.
Yeah, I would love to see the UFC make Zombie versus Little Heathen. I think that's about all I got for that card. Unless you have anything else, we'll get to the news, which kind of revolves around not UFC 220, this Saturday's card, but UFC 221, 222, and 223. And we'll go in order. We'll start at UFC 221 news. We barely missed doing the last show, I think last Friday or Saturday. We literally missed it by an hour or two. Right when we went off air, we found out that Robert Whittaker was out of UFC 221, the undisputed champ, becoming the undisputed champ after George St. Pierre relinquished his belt yet again to take time off. The champ is out, I think, due to a knee injury. So we're doing yet another interim belt, and it's going to be the interim middleweight belt. And instead of saying Luke Rockhold fight Robert Whittaker like we were originally, it's going to be Yoel Romero against Luke Rockhold. I don't hate that matchup at all. I think those really very well could be the best two middleweights in the world. Robert Whittaker not included. So I'm all for this fight. I really, breaking it down in my head, I guess just as far as who is overall a better fighter, I want to say Luke Rockhold, but stylistically, it's not about who has more tools, who has the bigger punch, who can do what. But stylistically, I look at, where is the fight going to take place? Yoel's probably going to try and clinch him, grapple him. Can Luke Rockhold get out of that? That'll be the question. If Luke can stay out of that, keep range, strike, throw kicks, throw leg kicks, land body kicks, kind of try and out cardio Yoel, I think he wins, but I don't know if he's able to do that, man, because Yoel not only has that crazy strength and crazy wrestling acumen, but the guy can land some furious strikes, whether it's punches or flying knees. The guy's been known to land ridiculous, so I guess I'm leaning Romero right now, but that could change. I mean, I could wake up tomorrow and be picking Rockhold. That'll probably change in my mind many times between now and UFC 221 in February. Yeah, so Yoel versus Rockhold. Which way is the wind blowing for you now that this is official?
Yeah, I mean, this really is a close matchup, an interesting one stylistically. Rockhold has solid jits, and he's got a diverse striking acumen. Yoel Romero, he's got the monster hands, crazy, crazy powerful hands, and he's got the super solid wrestling. So they're both well versed on the feet and on the ground. And Rockhold, he's got the range, as you mentioned, Jake. Man, and I think with his ground acumen, he could probably stay in a spot where he might not get put unconscious. I mean, I don't know. We would think that about Lyoto Machida, right? But look at how that turned out. So Man, it's a tough one. I'm definitely gonna have to look at it a little further the closer we get to it. But initially, I feel like I'm kind of leaning Romero in this one. I mean, wrestling is a huge part of it if you're able to dictate where it goes. And with Romero's acumen, I think there's not many people that I think are really gonna be able to consistently stop him from winning those wrestling battles. So I think he's certainly got the edge there. I'm leaning towards the OL early.
Yeah, that's the way I'm thinking. We got four more fight matchups, and instead of going too deep into them, because honestly, I think they're mostly rumors, and nothing has been confirmed yet, so we'll do these rapid fire instead of lingering on them. First one, UFC 222, rumored Gaethje versus Dustin Poirier, and what would be a high candidate for fight of the year early, I'm sure. I'm leaning Gaethje. Which way are you leaning?
Oh man, that's a tough call. That's a very tough call. Oof. Oh my goodness. I'd have to say, well, it, oh my goodness.
It's, yeah, and
Gaethje? Gaethje? I mean, I don't know. Poirier?
I hate to throw
No.
dust in any shade, but Gaethje has
Yeah.
just looked like a monster. I mean,
Yeah.
I think both of these guys, God, and 55 is so fucking loaded now. You have Ferguson and Habib, who are animals in their own right, and then you have guys like Justin and Dustin, who, goddamn, it seems like both dudes every time. I think both of these guys made up for four of the fights in the top 10. I think Justin Gaethje versus Michael Johnson was a top 10 fight of the year. Justin Gaethje versus Eddie Alvarez was a top 10 fight of the year. Dustin Poirier versus Eddie Alvarez was a top 10 fight of the year. And Dustin Poirier versus Jim Miller was a top 10 fight of the year. So these two dudes alone made up for nearly half of the top 10 fights of 2017. So, I mean, just going by clear MMA math here, this has Fight of 2018 written all over it.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's for sure. I mean, this would be fireworks. And I think that's kind of what makes it hard for me to pick this fight because, as I was going to say with the last one, kind of give it the wrestling edge. Wrestling edge would go to Gaethje, but then I'm sitting here like, would Gaethje actually employ his wrestling? Because we really haven't seen that at all in the two fights that he's been in the UFC. It's just been the craziest stand-up brawl they've ever seen. And again, Poirier. He's still pretty rangy, even for 155 pounds. So I'm sitting here thinking, well, Poirier may be able to get through and touch him up. And if it does go to the ground again, there's another guy that has some pretty slick jiu-jitsu. Dustin Poirier, he's been known to wrap up a submission or two in his UFC career. So, gosh, I think I've almost talked myself into leaning Poirier now if that fight were to happen. But yeah, oh no, certainly. No matter how it would shake out, definitely fight of the year implications all over that one early. I'm hoping they do make that match now that they got this rumor mill going.
And talking about that stacked lightweight division, the rumor mill has it that Conor might be stripped any day now. He doesn't want to fight until late this year. The guy hasn't fought since 2015, and I guess they're putting the onus on him that he needs to fight soon, or they're going to strip him. He doesn't want to fight soon. So if Conor does get stripped, the plan apparently is at UFC 223 this spring to try and schedule Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov yet again. And I think maybe a reason you're not hearing about any fights for Eddie Alvarez, I think they might just have him kind of like training on the side, sort of like they did with Rumble Johnson, I think, a while back for one of the title fights. Just have him training and be ready in case someone gets injured last minute. or someone can't make weight last minute, have Eddie there to sub in, but have that fight hopefully between Ferguson and Khabib and have it be for the undisputed lightweight belt. Conor would probably get a shot whenever he returned, if that is late 2017, if ever. So that seems to be the plan, and man, Tony Ferguson has put together one of the craziest, most impressive win streaks the UFC's ever seen, but it's hard to pick against Khabib Nurmagomedov the way he is. Just butt-fucked everybody. I guess if we are saying I have to pick between Tony and Khabib, I'm going with Khabib in a rumored lightweight championship match at UFC 223.
Well, I hope all the rumors are true. I hope they strip Conor McGregor. He ain't injured. He just doesn't
defend or vacate.
Fight. He doesn't want to fight. Dude, Randy Couture was stripped for less back in the day. They need to get it going. I know they've been wanting to just hold on to this cash cow and just pray that he comes back for some sort of pay-per-view that they can sell. But guess what? Even if you strip Conor McGregor of his title, the next fight you put him in, guaranteed probably won't even have to be a title fight. They'll probably still do just about as good a numbers as any other thing he's done in the UFC, because guaranteed it'll be the top 1, 2, or 3 ranked guy, if not an immediate title fight. Probably would be an immediate title fight. And, you're good to go. So, strip him. Let's get this division moving, and do Khabib versus Tony for the legit 155-pound title. I mean, Tony has the longest streak at 155 pounds going. One of the longest streaks that has to be the longest streak in 155-pound history. Certainly, I can't recall anyone else who's won that many. A couple that have gotten close. I know there's been a few 8-fight win streaks and some like that, but Tony is just a beast out there. Khabib, I mean, he's pretty close himself. I want to say he's 9-0 in the UFC, but just he fights so infrequently and has had to pull out of multiple fights. So I know this would be, what, the third time, the fourth time this fight's booked? I don't even know how many times this fight.
I think the third.
Right, so, it certainly seems to be the fight that needs to happen. These are the two guys that appear to be dominating over the entire division. Make it happen. You know, if Conor wants to come back, I'm sure the UFC will put him in an immediate title fight against whoever he wants it to be. And then, you know, if he can come back and start saying, oh, I never lost a title, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, let's get things moving. Let's keep this division. Keep it rolling now.
For real, let's keep it moving. There was another point I was just going to say, you know, all of that talk about a year ago, I was saying, if he goes to fight Floyd and makes $100 million, what's his incentive going to be to come back to risk his life for anything less than $20 million a fight? So that's, I guess, what the UFC is pretty much faced with, paying $20 million or more. I don't know what exactly he's demanding, but it's probably nowhere south, at least nowhere too far south of $20 million. I don't know. That could all be a podcast in its own right. So we'll move on. More rumor mill fights. Another UFC 223 potential fight. We could see Thug Rose going to defend her belt for the first time against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I don't know if Jessica Andrade is injured or held up or anything like that, or if the UFC gave the nod to the former champ just because of her dominant run as a champ. But it looks like that JJ, at least if the rumors hold true, might be getting another crack at the title against Doug Rose, who beat her pretty emphatically with a knockout. Yeah, I guess that 223 card, I assume it'll be in Vegas, but no official word yet on where they will be holding that one. Which way are you leaning here? Man, you got Thug Rose, who knocked her out the first time, and, God, I feel like an asshole for saying it, but I think I have Joanna in a rematch. Who are you picking, Pat?
Dang. I mean, Joanna, she just beasted over the entire division for so long. She looks like the unbeatable force. It kind of makes you wonder, well, was she taking Thug Rose lightly in this fight? Was she believing her own hype? Was she doing too much media? This, that, and the other. Thug Rose, I want to say, had never even won a fight by TKO before going into that fight against one of the most feared strikers in the 115-pound division. So it was a long shot. Was this the women's mixed martial arts equivalent of Sarah GSP? I hate to even say it. I don't think that it is. Thug Rose, you know, she's a legit mixed martial artist. Not to say that Sarah isn't. I don't want that to sound wrong the other way either. But Thug Rose, I mean, she's very skilled. She's very long for the division. You know, she's tall. She's got the reach. Which, you know, having that over Jan Jacek. You know, Jacek, very tall and, you know, had a lot of reach for the division. That was not the first fight Joanna had fought. I want to say Valerie Letourneau probably had a little bit of a size on her as well. But, you know, all credit to Thug Rose. And I got to say, I think I've got to go with her again in this rematch. I mean, she's proved she could do it once. You know, I'm a huge fan of Joanna. I've loved her style. And, you know, every fight she's been in the UFC, I've thoroughly enjoyed. She just puts on a striking clinic every single time. She's a great mixed martial artist, but you know, is she Anderson Silva? Did she accumulate that 16 fight win streak where, you know, I can see her get knocked out and say, no, you know, that's not happening again. I don't know. I mean, she did look supremely unbeatable leading up to the fight with Thug Rose. I didn't, you know, I had Joanna in that fight all day and night. But, I mean, Joanna proved she can, or I'm sorry, Rose Namajunas proved that she could do it. So, I think if this fight were to be made, I would pick her again. I wouldn't be disappointed if Joanna were able to reclaim her title. But I think, at least, you know, as the early speculation, you know, we're just speculating on this fight here. I think early I'd be leaning towards Thug Rose.
And the last rumor here on the list, Cyborg and Nunez. No official event, but maybe a May Brazil event to see. Nothing yet about whether it would be a catchweight, maybe at 140, whether it would be at featherweight, or whether it would be at bantamweight, where Nunez is the champ. But the two Brazilian champions... you know, I don't know if you make this fight just because there's a lack of anyone right now really at 145 that stands out. You know, there's no one really currently at 135 now that Nunez has beat Shevchenko. So neither champ really has anyone screaming, you know, that stands out as a deserving contender. But you did make the point before we went live, like, damn, it's like Cyborg, you're like just starting her reign in the UFC, it feels like, and she's already clearing out everyone. She, you know, beat Holly. She's likely going to be a big favorite over Amanda just because of the size difference and the fact that, you know, Cyborg has the incredible record and skill set that she does. I guess I'm picking Cyborg here. Nunez could be a live dog. She's shown incredible prowess, especially during her title reign. But I don't think I'm picking anybody over Cyborg right now. The way she's looked, she's been fighting very impressively.
I will have to second that, Jake. I mean, Amanda Nunes, she has been. She's certainly come into her own as of late, and she's just been dominating the women's bantamweight division. But now, Cyborg Justino, or I'm sorry, yeah, Cyborg Justino, she really is the women's mixed martial arts version of Anderson Silva. I mean, the only person she's lost to in MMA, I mean, you could say in the last decade, the only person she's lost to was a drug test. And even then, you know, that just goes as no contest. She has literally been beating up and knocking out every single woman in front of her for the last decade. I want to say, I mean, my gosh, her fight versus Gina Carano. Her fight versus Gina Carano, that probably, I want to say that was Strikeforce 2008. I mean, she has been on top for as long as can be and has barely looked beatable. Even in the fight with Holly, she got busted up a little bit, but you never really got the feeling that, oh man, you know, Cyborg's in for it now. It was just a matter of time. She did what she always does, and I feel like she would just do the same here. Now, Nunes could be her toughest test. I don't know. It seems that maybe Holly Holm, just by the fact she was the first woman to go 25 minutes with Cyborg, you know, Holly Holm might have been. So who knows? Who knows where things are going to go with that? But yeah, Amanda Nunes, I mean, she's really been tearing it up, and I mean, that would be a close fight. I think Nunes definitely has the potential to take her 25 minutes, but I think that Cyborg would prevail as well. She's just a bigger Amanda Nunes, really, and I mean, of all except she's really got better credentials. She's got better wins. She's cleared out a who's who and basically every woman that's ever stepped in front of her for the past decade. So, yeah, you got to go with Cyborg in that one, I think.
Hard to pick against her. That's all I got for rumors. I guess we'll move on to this weekend. We'll start with Bellator 192. We got a UFC and a Bellator card, both on Saturday. Bellator 192 starting 9 p.m. on the Paramount Network. That you used to know as Spike. I guess it'll be the same channel that Spike was. But as of, I think, this week, they're changing the name of Spike TV to the Paramount Network. Super boring-ass name for a channel, especially compared to Spike TV. But nonetheless, we will be seeing fights on the Paramount Network, Bellator 192. Main card has a lot of fun fights. Aaron Pico, this will be his third fight, and both of his other two fights were stunning for different reasons. One being a crazy loss in his debut where he was heavily favored, and then his second fight coming back and flattening the guy with a punch cold. Pico minus 800, yet again, heavily favored, so we'll see what he can do against his opponent, Shane Crutchton. Also seeing Georgie Kirikanyan take on Henry Corrales, and Goichi Yamaguchi take on Michael Chandler, who we last saw lose to Brett Primus after suffering that leg injury. Before that was on a 4-fight winning streak, and I believe had that Bellator lightweight strap before Primus took it off him back at Bellator NYC last June. So Chandler looking to get back in the saddle and maybe get his belt back at lightweight. Looking forward to seeing Pico fight. You know, if everything they say about him is true, he is the next big thing. So it's interesting seeing that that guy's career start to shape up. So definitely going to be watching just to see how Pico does, and like I said, how Michael Chandler does rebounding from that heartbreaking loss against Brent Primus.
There's definitely some intriguing action on the Bellator 192 card. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing if Yamauchi can employ some of his grappling skills against Chandler. I mean, Chandler's great everywhere it goes. Yamauchi seems to have some decent stand up himself. Should be a good fight. I mean, can we talk about Rampage versus Chael now? This is, my goodness.
Let's get straight to it. Page versus Chael. Which way are you leaning in that one?
Well, I think I've got to lean with Chael Sonnen. I mean, the American Gangster. Rampage and Chael, two of my favorite characters in mixed martial arts, really. I mean, both have given us so much over the years. Rampage looked pretty big in one of the last pictures I remember seeing him against Chael Sonnen, and not in the best way. Who knows? Maybe that'll end up working to his favor against Chael. If you're too big for someone to take down and use gravity, I mean, maybe that's a strategy. But I think I'm leaning Chael there. What about you?
You know, two of my rules are going to clash here. One of my rules is when Rampage is, like, happy and doesn't seem to care that much going into a fight, he always loses. Another rule I have is Chael Sonnen always loses to black dudes. So, which by the way, is not racist. That is not racist. If anything, it's racist to white people. But,
if that's what his record indicates.
I mean, you just need to take a cursory glance. Don't look too hard, but, your Anderson Silva's, your John Jones, your Rashad Evans, those fights did not go well. So, Chael is the underdog, but I think I'm leaning toward picking him as well. He seems a little more motivated, and I think it's going to come down to wrestling, and I think it's, even though Rampage will have somewhat of a size advantage, I think very quickly Rampage might tire out, and if it gets anywhere past the first round, and I don't think we're still in that era where Rampage is really dangerous to knock people out in the first round anymore. I think Page could win that first round, but when it becomes a cardio war and Rampage begins to tire out a little bit, I think Sonnen's gas tank will win him the fight. And your main event, Rory McDonald versus Douglas Lima. What you think about that one, brother?
Bro, now that is a legit top mixed martial arts fight there. I mean, Rory McDonald and Douglas Lima, both world-ranked at 170 pounds. So nice to see a relevant, high-ranked fight going on in Bellator there.
Man, one of the best fights skill wise that they've ever put on. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, that's for sure. And my goodness, I want to say, who is it? Douglas Lima. Didn't Douglas Lima, he just shut someone down who came over from the UFC trying to get that gold? Unless I'm mistaken, but Douglas Lima, he's been ever since Ben Askren.
Lorenz Larkin.
Lorenz Larkin, there it is. And Lorenz, man, I thought he had a shot. Lorenz, shouts out to Riverside. Lorenz has legit striking, but man, you know, Douglas Lima has showed during his Bellator tenure that his striking is no joke. Man, and he's always fun to watch, always puts on good performances, and certainly a world-class talent. And it's going to be great to see him against Rory McDonald. Certainly, certainly has to be, I'd say, considered in the top 10 in welterweights in the world right now. Always a game fighter. Definitely has one of the most solid skill sets. That's a tough one, my man. I think I'm leaning Lima, though. I think, you know, I'm impressed with his win over Larkin, and I believe in the skills. I think Lima's going to do Bellator proud and shut down another UFC stalwart there.
I'll go ahead and cut straight to the chase. I'm taking Rory McDonald. I think if he goes in there with it, you know, it did seem like he had a little bit of aftershock from that Lawler fight that maybe took a little bit off of him. But I think Rory will step in there with that same ferocity we've seen him fight with before. That being said about Rory, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Lima. I will actually say this. I think Douglas Lima is the most underrated fighter in mixed martial arts. Period. I don't think he gets near enough praise. He has dominated Bellator. I mean, look at the guy's record, and it's a long string of wins with a occasional loss peppered in there. He's very active. He takes on top guys, and man, I would love to see him take a trip over to the UFC, because the UFC obviously has a little bit deeper welterweight roster. But Douglas Lima is the real motherfucking deal, and if he is able to make it over Rory, man, I wouldn't be that shocked. And Rory is a guy who today, I mean, you look at Rory's fight against the current UFC champion, Tyron Woodley, Rory pieced him the fuck up. Rory could be, you know, the best welterweight in the world. We don't know. But this is an excellent, excellent fight. I'm very, very much looking forward to it. And we'll switch lanes over to UFC 220, unless you have anything else on Bellator. That's going to be a fun fight going on around the same time. Your prelims have Islam Makhachev, Gleison Tibau, Dustin Ortiz versus Alexandre Pantoja. We got Kyle Bochniak versus Brandon Davis. The main card, yeah, I really don't have much for UFC 220 other than the co-main and main event. That's kind of, I guess, the trade-off we get with these UFC Fight Night Stevens versus Choi cards. We get a lot of fights that normally would bolster a strong pay-per-view, but they're plucked off and made to be their own little mini-events. So the pay-per-views like UFC 220, good main event, good co-main event, but not very deep.
Yeah, certainly. At least not for name value, you know. Stylistic matchups, you know, I'm sure the fights will be there. I'm sure things, you know, there will be some good action. But, yeah, you know, like you said, you've got fight nights to main event. You've got featured preliminary bouts on Fox Sports 1 to put together. Featured preliminary bouts on Fight Pass, you know. So, yeah, a lot of that does get drawn away from the pay-per-views sometimes.
And actually, speaking of last week's event, one thing I didn't want to mention and I forgot to get by was Uriah Hall didn't make weight. Apparently had really bad problems cutting down to 185 in that proposed fight that was going to go down against Vitor Belfort. Apparently, like, had to be rushed to the ER and was having seizures. He is doing fine, and his team, they're talking about maybe moving up to 205, but the important thing being that he is feeling better now. So thoughts over to him and his camp. Shout out to Coach Clayton. That moves us to the co-main event of UFC 220, Daniel Cormier versus Volkan Ozdemir. And before we talk about the matchup, I just want to take my hat off to DC, who had the line of the week earlier today, talking about John Jones, who's facing sanctioning for a failed drug test following his UFC 214 victory over Cormier in California. Jones recently took a polygraph test, which apparently confirmed he did not knowingly use steroids. How convenient. The test wasn't done by the request of the UFC, USADA, or the California State Athletic Commission. And Daniel Cormier was asked about it at Wednesday's open workouts and said, quote, "John Jones took a polygraph test to prove his innocence, and I'm going to say this. Ted Bundy passed a polygraph test and then killed the fucking guy that was giving it to him."
Damn.
Which isn't true. Ted Bundy didn't actually kill the polygraph operator, but is a hilarious line nonetheless. That Cormier Jones rivalry has to go down as one of the all-time greatest. One of the strangest, too. But, yeah, you have now John Jones taking polygraph tests to prove his innocence. Cormier versus Ozdemir. This is a guy in Volkan Ozdemir, who we really didn't hear much about until recently. It wasn't even until he fought Ovince St. Preux that we knew his name. He beats OSP via split decision. Then he's a big underdog against this guy, Misha Serkunov, who's supposed to be the next big deal at 205. Volkan doesn't just beat him. Volkan knocks him out in under a minute, in under 30 seconds, as a matter of fact, 28 seconds in. And then he gets a big boost in opponent, fights Jimmy Manoa, and he does it again, knocks Jimmy out in under 1 minute. Those two wins especially, I don't know so much about the split decision winning against OSP, but those two quick knockouts being his last two wins vaulted him way up, and just the fact that Cormier has fought a lot of guys up in front of the line at light heavyweight, and the division needs some new names. We now have Volkan fighting DC for the strap. This is a fight you talk about styles. Cormier has shown he can take a punch against the hardest hitting, and I literally mean the hardest hitting, because he took shots against Rumble Johnson. I see Cormier tying up Volkan, not giving him any space, and maybe submitting him in the second round, but I don't think, I think this is awesome that we have new blood at 205. The guy's only 28, you know, and we have a lot of guys in their 30s at the top of 205 currently. So this is a guy who very well could be a future champion. I don't think UFC 220 is going to be where he finds the belt, though. I think Daniel Cormier is going to win that fight. What about you?
I'm leaning DC as well, for sure. I mean, Cormier, for me, is up there in the pound-for-pound conversation. I mean, his skill set, his track record at heavyweight as well as light heavyweight, only person he's ever lost to is John Jones. And, man, he was doing pretty good rounds one and two of that second fight until he got a shin planted on his forehead. But be that as it may, John Jones himself really having a super strong argument for being one of the best pound for pound that there's ever been. I mean, Cormier, he's in that kind of rarefied air. Ozdemir, as impressive as he's looked, being a big underdog in his first, or at least an underdog in his first three UFC fights, knocking everybody out in the manner that he has, it's been super impressive. But he really hasn't fought anybody that could give him a strong test. I mean, well, you know, OSP, he's got some good wrestling and grappling for sure. I mean, he's got those Von Flue choke, many submissions using that. But as far as just pure wrestling pedigree, I mean, really, Daniel Cormier, he's about as tough of a test as you can get. Certainly a different level than OSP. I want to say OSP has a football background anyhow, maybe with some wrestling in there as well. But And it's certainly not the credentials that Cormier does. It's going to be a whole nother beast. And as you mentioned, Jake, I mean, he can take shots from Rumble. He can take shots from just about everyone in the heavyweight division. Josh Barnett broke his hand punching Daniel Cormier. Yeah, I mean, that's how good of a chin he's got. He shattered Barnett's hand, really, with that. So, I mean, he can take the shots, and he can outlast a guy if he needs to get it down to the ground and to work those submissions or work that ground and pound. So, for myself, I'm taking Cormier in this one, too. I think he's going to get himself a little ground and pound TKO.
And in the main event, we've been hearing more and more about this heavyweight contender, Francis Ngannou, finally getting a crack at the title. Stipe Miocic looking to be the first heavyweight champion ever to defend the belt 3 times. And he is on an incredible run, TKOing Mark Hunt, KOing Andrei Arlovski in the first round, KOing Fabricio Werdum in the first round to win the belt, KOing Alistair Overeem in the first round for his first defense, and KOing Junior Dos Santos in the first round for his second defense. In my mind, maybe the most impressive 5-fight win streak of all time. Just if you look at how dominant he's been and the list of people he's knocked out. Hunt, Arlovski, Werdum, Overeem, Junior Dos Santos. 5 Hall of Famers. 5 guys who have all different skill sets, different challenges to overcome, and 5 dominant victories by Stipe. And as good as Francis Ngannou has looked, as incredible a 2017 as he had, knocking out Andrei Arlovski and Alistair Overeem both in the first round, I just don't understand why so many people are sleeping on Stipe. How Stipe is an underdog in this fight perplexes me. Yes, Ngannou has 2 impressive first-round knockouts. Miocic has 4. And yes, Francis maybe has that, you know, the KO against Overeem was just nasty the way he uppercutted Overeem's lights out, and it took a while for those lights to come back on. I think that this fight stays standing, and everyone's questioning Stipe's chin. You know, this is a Stipe who stood in there 25 minutes against Junior Dos Santos, who landed bomb after bomb. And yes, Ngannou might throw a little bit harder than Junior Dos Santos, but not that much harder. Either guy can land at any moment and end the fight, and that's what's beautiful about the heavyweight division and why more people will watch this fight than will have watched any one of Demetrius Johnson's fights. And it's sad, but true. You know, the heavier the guys are, the more likely we are to see a knockout. But this fight especially, you know, I could see it going either way, but I don't see why Stipe isn't getting more love than he is getting. I think he should be the favorite, and I guess I'm taking him here. I'll take him by first round knockout. Fuck it.
Bold call there, good sir. Bold call. I like it. You know, I'm a huge fan of Ngannou. I mean, who isn't? I mean, really, when you come through steamrolling everybody.
And both are likable as hell, too. I mean, they both have really great personalities.
They're not doing the stupid face like Werdum, you know, or assaulting other fighters or, you know, using slurs or anything like that outside the octagon. You know, they're definitely both seem to be likable characters for sure. And I mean, in the octagon, what more do you want? They both put it all out there. Whew, man. And of course, I mean, what Ngannou has been able to do coming into the UFC, I mean, he's riding a 6-fight win streak, finished everybody. I mean, he definitely seems like a tough test. Has a Kimura submission over Anthony Hamilton, but that is Anthony Hamilton. That isn't Mark Hunt, Andre Arlovski, Fabricio Verdum, Alistair Overeem, Junior Dos Santos. As you had mentioned, Jake, you know, the quality of the two win streaks, or at least the quality of opponent over the two win streaks, does not compare. Really, and now, of course, styles make fights. That's why they make these fights. But for myself, I think Stipe, you know, he's a crafty veteran by now. He's been in the game for some time. He's been fighting in the UFC for almost 7 years now. And, you know, he's the champ for a reason. He's really put it all together as of late. And I think, you know, we've seen him go into deep waters, too, into the five-round fights. I think his fight versus Mark Hunt could be a similar game plan to what we had seen. You know, if he doesn't like what's happening in the stand up, you know, he might just try and drag him to the ground and just pound the tar out of him. I want to say in Ngannou's fight versus Curtis Blaydes, you know, there was definitely some fatigue going on there. It makes me wonder, you know, again, we've seen Stipe go five. How deep can Ngannou go? He's, you know, never, well, he went one fight, I want to say, that was a decision, and that was two rounds, and he lost that. So, Stipe, he's been tested over a much longer affair, and I think the cardio will definitely be a big help. I think I'm betting on Stipe to get that ground and pound TKO in round two.
And I guess that does it for UFC 217, or UFC 217, TMP, the MMA Podcast 217, previewing UFC 220. Got a little ahead of myself. We appreciate you tuning in. As always, Twitter, the MMA Podcast, Twitter, Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, anything else for the people before we let them go?
Jake, we love the people here at the MMA Podcast. God bless all you people for listening. And Jake, God bless you for hosting such a damn fine show. Always a pleasure being on here with you.
God bless you, Pat. Keep dabbing on the haters. We'll see you next week. Till then, we go.